Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. We decided not to video stream tonight, but we are live and in your ear. Next week, filling in for me, will be Brad Friedman all week. We are going to take a staycation. That means we don't have any money to go anywhere, so we're going to stay here, do some things around the house. Sunday, of course, is July 4th, and at Common Dreams today, I think it was at Common Dreams, they published a piece by Howard Zinn, who passed away here. Oh, when did Howard Zinn die? Back in January, I believe. He wrote this in 2006. Here's what Howard Zinn had to say under the headline, or the heading, Put Away the Flags. On this July 4th, we would do well to renounce nationalism and all its symbols, the flag, the pledges of allegiance, the anthems, the insistence in song that God must single out America to be blessed. Is not nationalism, that devotion to a flag, an anthem, a boundary so fierce it engenders mass murder, is not nationalism one of the great evils of our time, along with racism, along with religious hatred? These ways of thinking, cultivated, nurtured, indoctrinated from childhood on, have been useful to those in power and deadly for those out of power. National spirit can be benign in a country that is small and lacking both in military power and a hunger for expansion, Switzerland, Norway, Costa Rica, many more. But in a nation like ours, huge, possessing thousands of weapons of mass destruction, what might have been harmless pride becomes an arrogant nationalism, dangerous to others and to ourselves. Our citizenry has been brought up to see our nation as different from others, an exception in the world, uniquely moral, expanding into other lands in order to bring civilization, liberty, democracy. That self-deception started early. When the first English settlers moved into Indian land in Massachusetts Bay and were resisted, the violence escalated into war. War with the Pequot Indians. The killing of Indians was seen as approved by God. The taking of land is commanded by the Bible. The Puritans cited one of the Psalms, which says, quote, ask of me and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession, end quote. When the English set fire to a Pequot village and massacred men, women, and children, the Puritan theologian Cotton Mather said, quote, it was supposed that no less than 600 Pequot souls were brought down to hell that day, end quote. On the eve of the Mexican War, an American journalist declared it our, quote, manifest destiny to overspread the continent allotted by Providence, end quote. After the invasion of Mexico began, the New York Herald announced, quote, we believe it is part of our destiny to civilize that beautiful country, end quote. It was always supposedly for benign purposes that our country went to war. We invaded Cuba in 1898 to liberate the Cubans and went to war in the Philippines shortly after, as President McKinley put it, quote, to civilize and Christianize, end quote, the Filipino people. As our armies were committing massacres in the Philippines, At least 600,000 Filipinos died in a few years of conflict. Elihu Root, our Secretary of War, was saying, quote, "The American soldier is different from all other soldiers of all other countries since the war began. He is the advance guard of liberty and justice, of law and order, and of peace and happiness," end quote. We see in Iraq that our soldiers are not different. They have perhaps, against their better nature, killed thousands of Iraq civilians. And some soldiers have shown themselves capable of brutality, of torture. Yet they are victims, too, of our government's lies. How many times have we heard President Bush tell the troops that if they die, if they return without arms or legs or blinded, it is for liberty, for democracy? One of the effects of nationalist thinking is a loss of a sense of proportion. The killing of 2,300 people at Pearl Harbor becomes the justification for killing 240,000 in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The killing of 3,000 people on September 11th, 2001 becomes the justification for killing tens of thousands of people in Afghanistan and Iraq. And nationalism is given a special virulence when it is said to be blessed by providence. Today, we have a president invading two countries in 4 years who announced on the campaign trail in 2004 that God speaks through him. We need to refute the idea that our nation is different from or morally superior to the other imperial powers of world history. We need to assert our allegiance to the human race and not to any one nation. Howard Zinn. It was published in 2006, thus the references to President Bush. I have, for some time, I've had problem with the jingoistic craziness that occurs in most in most cities, towns, villages, shopping malls on the evening of July 4th. So what I've tried to do is separate it from any kind of political slash religious significance and declare it a summer holiday. To me, it's just, whoop, whoop, let's shoot off some fireworks and drink beer and eat watermelon and watch the kids chase each other with sparklers. But you always, anytime you get together in one of those groups, you always have to deal with the people, the supernationalists, the jingoists, who almost wear their funny little party hats made to look like an American flag with an air of arrogance, like, I dare you not to wear a hat like this. But it has been difficult to break away from that. My mother was, and to a lesser degree, my father, very patriotic. And because she was of that generation that still was blinded by the flag waving and the horn blowing and didn't realize even then how aggressive and imperialistic this nation was. But because she was patriotic, she used to take us kids, my sister and brothers and I, to all the parades, all the events, anything that had marching bands and waving flags and patriotism embedded in it was something that my mother determined we had to be exposed to. So it took a long time for me to, as we say in the South, get shed of all that nonsense and realize that the patriotism that my mother found so appealing comes from the same point of origin as the people who justified torture in Abu Ghraib, torture in Guantanamo, and who continue to recklessly occupy and kill in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I think this 4th of July, what we're going to do is go go to the town square in Decatur, Georgia, and watch the fireworks, listen to music, and have just a great old time.
That's how the lead gets in.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malone.
Is that the Washington Post March? Is that what that is? <clears throat> 162 House votes for an exit strategy from Afghanistan. I didn't know that had occurred. I'm sorry, you wanted to add something to our pre-4th of July.
Yeah. I feel very much the same way you do about the jingoism and the sort of phony patriotism. But also, I just want to play devil's advocate and say, on the other hand, I kind of refuse to let the teabaggers take away the 4th of July for me. You know, I will wear my red, white, and blue. I will put little ribbons and sparklers in Molly's hair and decorate her little bicycle and have her march in the parade because, by God, liberal is patriotic. Dissent is patriotic. Without dissent, it's not America. It was the foundation of our country, and it's my country. And I'm, you know, I'll take it back if I can. When I can. I'm not going to let them have it. They're not going to take it away from me.
And the way we took it away from the original owners.
Exactly. Like, we stole this damn country fair and square. From the Native Americans.
Right.
It's ours now.
It's ours. We stole it.
I'm not going to let the neocons take it away from me. Because I'm half Syrian and I have every right to be here. Well, not really half, but you know.
Wow. So, while I am enjoying the fireworks, Kathy will be daring anyone to come up and say it's...
Knock that flag off my shoulder. Go ahead. Try it.
I'll kick your ass. Of course, most of what she just said, I'm sure, is in jest. Regarding Afghanistan, the reason I bring this up, first of all, John Nichols has it at thenation.com online, but the vote was taken, when was it, earlier this week, for cloture to stop the Republicans from denying people an extension of unemployment benefits that people so desperately need. And the vote failed, of course, and then all the senators and members of Congress are off for a nice holiday. Well, hundreds of thousands of Americans now see their unemployment benefits end yesterday, July 1st. So the big deal on the part of the Republicans and a few conservative Democrats was, well, it's going to cost $34 billion for this extension. Can't afford that. But at the same time, Barack Obama asked for and got $33 billion in spending for the occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. Isn't that amazing how that works? And they are his occupations now. They are his. Thursday night, the House of Representatives approved the $33 billion to spend as part of a broad emergency supplemental spending bill. They're always emergencies, aren't they? Oh, what's the big emergency now where it concerns slaughter in Afghanistan and Iraq? What's the emergency? Two-thirds of House Democrats and 9 Republicans. However, voted for an amendment sponsored by Appropriation Committee Chair David Obey of Wisconsin, Democrat, and Jim McGovern, Democrat of Massachusetts, and Walter Jones, Republican of North Carolina, that would have required the president to rapidly begin developing a plan for the safe, orderly, and expeditious redeployment of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. This amendment, now called the Obey McGovern Jones Amendment, also called for more detailed reporting to Congress on the status of the occupation. Why? Who is going to report to Congress? Military leaders or the corporate weapons makers? Wouldn't it be more appropriate to have the heads of about 6 different companies that provide most of the death and destruction on Earth, have them sit down and report to Congress? But anyway, the Obey McGovern Jones Amendment called for more detailed reporting to Congress on the status of the occupation and for stricter congressional oversight of private contractors working on the ground in Afghanistan in order to address charges of corruption, waste, fraud, abuse, murder, mayhem, chaos, death, destruction. The amendment received 162 votes. 260 members opposed it. So we know there are 162 votes in the U.S. House to end the occupation of Afghanistan. More on this when we come back. Do I have to stand up when you play this?
Above the fruited plain, America, America, God shed His grace on me and crown good with brotherhood from sea to shining.
Campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. I don't know why we're playing the William Tell Overture, but it's 25 before the hour. Anyway, the amendment, the Obey McGovern Jones Amendment that calls for the safe, orderly, and expeditious redeployment of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, that amendment received 162 votes in the U.S. House. Well, 260 members opposed it. But here's the interesting breakdown, the partisan nature of the breakdown. Among the Democrats, 153 backed the amendment. Let's get out. 98 opposed it. Among Republicans, 9 backed the amendment and 162 opposed it. So Obama is now relying on Republicans to provide unquestioning support for his war, while most Democrats want to see an exit strategy developed. Republicans. Now, significantly, 100 members of the House, 93 Democrats and 7 Republicans, voted for an amendment offered by California Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, which proposed to fully fund a withdrawal plan. 25 members, that would be 22 Democrats and 3 Republicans, cast the boldest anti-war votes, backing an amendment to strike Afghanistan funding from the supplemental bill. Now, what does all this add up to? Congress has not checked or balanced the president, and that is disappointing, although opportunities still exist to do so. What should be understood, however, is that the president's own party is losing patience with these half-witted, murderous war strategies. As Paul Martin, a policy and a director and political director for Peace Action, said yesterday, quote, "A year ago, American voters turned against the Afghanistan war. They understand that the enormous costs of blood and treasure are not necessarily making us safer. Congress is slowly catching up with their constituents. The votes in the House showed increasing congressional concern for a failed policy in the Afghanistan region at a time when representatives are thinking about elections 4 months from now." End quote. We've been in Afghanistan for 9 years. It's the longest war in our nation's history. We've lost more than 1,100 American lives and spent close to $300 billion. We've also been in Iraq for 7 years, where 4,400 Americans died, and we have spent more than $700 billion there, which comes to a total of $1 trillion. And every dollar spent on war is a dollar not available for job creation in America or for our schools or for helping those afflicted by natural and man-made disasters. This $33 billion that was approved by the House Thursday night for more corporate war-making could have employed 300,000 teachers in schools across America. John Nichols, writing at thenation.com with a few little gratuitous comments of my own thrown in there. Hi. Michael Steele spoke the truth. Every time Michael Steele speaks the truth, everybody jumps on him, the president, the Republicans. He is a jerk. I mean, let's face it, Michael Steele, the head of the RNC, is a real idiot. But still, today he suggested that the war in Afghanistan could not be won, and he blames Obama for the war. Now, he's right on both issues. He was at a Republican fundraiser in Connecticut last night, and he was videotaped criticizing this decision by President Obama to bolster the Afghanistan war effort. The comments, of course, like I just gave you the stats, contradicts the stance of his filthy party, which has consistently pushed for more troops and funding in Afghanistan as long as it's not their families or themselves or their, you know, their protected status. Steele said, quote, at this fundraiser, quote, this was a war of Obama's choosing. This is not something the United States had actively prosecuted or wanted to engage in, end quote. Well, come on, Michael, you know, that's kind of a half-assed statement even from you, but you are right in that it is Obama's war and it cannot be won. He also called the recent resignation of General Stanley McChrystal, late of Afghan war commander status, he called it comical. And he made fun of Obama for deciding to increase the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. He said, quote, if he's such a student of history, has he not understood that you know that's the one thing you don't do is engage in a land war in Afghanistan? Because, Steele added, everyone who has tried over 1,000 years of history has failed. End quote. Now, of course, the United States military invaded Afghanistan at the direction of Dick Cheney through the mouth of George Bush in retaliation for the attacks on September 11, 2001 here. Anyway, the comments sparked a wave of criticism from Democrats and calls for Steele's resignation led by prominent Republican conservative columnist Bill Kristol, who never spent 2 seconds in a uniform of any sort. Kristol, in his blog on the Weekly Standard magazine site, said, quote, "Needless to say, the war in Afghanistan was not a war of Obama's choosing. It has been prosecuted by the United States under Presidents Bush and Obama. Republicans have consistently supported the effort. There are, of course, those who think we should pull out of Afghanistan, and they're certainly entitled to make their case, but one of them shouldn't be the chairman of the Republican Party." End quote. Now, poor Michael Steele has issued a statement now where he is trying to extricate himself from this latest step of his into another massive cow pie. And he said Obama's shift in the U.S. military focus from Iraq to Afghanistan means, quote, "this is his strategy," end quote, whatever that means. He went on to say, "as we have learned through history, winning a war in Afghanistan is a difficult task. We must also remember that after the tragedy of September 11th is also a necessary one. The stakes are too high for us to accept anything but success in Afghanistan." What? What? Rush Limbaugh must have called him up and said, "boy, I will come over there and sit on your dark ass if you don't just change everything around." And Democrats, of course, pounced on the comments by Steele. Democratic National Committee spokesman Brad Woodhouse said, quote, "it is simply unconscionable that Michael Steele would undermine the morale of our troops when what they need is our support and encouragement," end quote. I mean, And some of you people still wonder why you hear on this program and others that the Democratic Party is a bunch of chumps to a far greater degree with far more corrosive consequences than the Republican Party, because the Democrats still claim to be the party of the people. Hog snot. Well, Michael Steele, it's, you know, you're, I really do think you're kind of a joke and a jerk and a crybaby and a coward. I mean, all Rush Limbaugh had to do is shift his bulk around in his chair and you retreated from what you said about Limbaugh. But you got this one right, Michael. You got it is Obama's war. Well, who in the hell's would it be if not Obama's, True Seeker? How long has a man been president? What? We're coming up on 2 years? At what point do wars that could be ended by executive order, since that's how they began, really, wars can be stopped by executive order? It's Obama's war. And it is unwinnable.
That we fly across the sea, and our proud cluster bombs that destroy life and limb for generations to come from the ground that they lay in. Missiles fall from the air, leaving depleted uranium everywhere, and the cannon.
10 before the hour. Ba, ba, diddly up, boop, bop, diddly bam, bam. Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader! Anybody out there? Let me see some hands. Anybody remember Ralph Nader? Let me see. I'll be damned. There's two hands out there raised. All right. He's off on one of his terrors again. He has a piece of Common Dreams titled Hammering the Poor and Vulnerable. Oh, God. He starts out by reminding us there's a reason why so many centuries ago every major religion warned its adherents not to give too much power to what was called the merchant class. And the reason, of course, is still here. The commercial drive knows few self-imposed boundaries, especially when it resides in large corporations. Da 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 da. If you want to understand how bad it is, you take a look at how companies treat those who are most powerless, most vulnerable, or most preoccupied. Here, courtesy of Ralph Nader, are a few illustrations that highlight the serious failures of law enforcement. Preteen children. The direct marketing to children knows no limits of decency, undermining parental authority with penetrating marketing schemes and temptations. Companies deceptively excite youngsters to buy massive amounts of products that are bad for their safety, their health, their minds. Think junk food, loaded with fat and salt and sugar. Increases obesity, diabetes, predisposes a kid for high blood pressure later on, yada, yada, yada. Obesity produces sickness, death, disability, and large medical bills. And marketers are selling ever more violent entertainment, too, and soft porn with delivery systems that escape parental review or supervision. Television is no longer the only route to children. Our 14-year-old, then startling book, Children First, A Parent's Guide to Corporate Predators, reads as an understatement. He means he wrote it 14 years ago, and it was very startling when it came out. Children First, A Parent's Guide to Corporate Predators, now reads as an understatement. We constantly are on guard and against these predatory bastards where it concerns Molly. Now, 25 years ago, when my son Chris was 6 years old, it was not quite as bad. I remember buying him a Nintendo that he plugged into, somehow, don't ask me, the television. And the first thing I noticed, he had Mario Brothers game. First thing I noticed was by the second day that he had it, he not only A, had discovered technological highlights of this device that I would never understand, and B, it had him captured. So one of the battle royals I had with Chris when he was about 7 years old was about how much time he would sit in front of that video monitor with his hands working those controls. And Dad, I didn't have another a parental unit to discuss it with since I was a single parent at the time, so I just told him, 1 hour a day, period. You can take it in 4 15-minute sessions, 2:30s, or 1:60, but that's it. Well, being a kid, you know, he would glom up the whole hour. And when he came off of that hour, he was like somebody who had been invaded by a body snatcher or a soul eater or a brain scrambler. It was incredible to watch what happened to my then 7-year-old son after an hour of Nintendo 25 years ago. So, most interesting thing happened after a few months. The Nintendo device broke. and Dad just couldn't afford a new one. Which is not to say that Chris didn't continue to occasionally play Nintendo when he went to his friends' houses, but at least we got the beast out of ours. And now we have Molly. A quarter of a century later, here's Molly, who has received as a present a little handheld device called a DSi. And it's also Nintendo. Only this thing is totally self-contained. It's about the size and lethality of a cigarette case. And we watch Molly play with her DSi Nintendo, which is also a video camera, which is also a camera, which is also able to link to a computer, to an ISP floating in the atmosphere. And oh my God, Molly is a month away from being six, and she does things with her DSi that the engineers in Houston during Apollo 13 would have loved to have been able to do. So once again, we find ourselves, or I find myself, and of course this is Kathy's first go-around, saying to our child, no, no Nintendo, but here's what you can do. You can read, which she's still willing to do. She hasn't been corrupted yet. But she's never, ever in her entire life, and I swear this before all things I consider holy, which is really nothing, but she's never tasted a McDonald's hamburger or a Burger King or what's some of the other ones? Or a Wendy's or any of this garbage. Never. Not once. Yay, Mike and Kathy!
Do you know why so?
The hour, Ralph Nader wants to point out again, as he has through most of his life, how the poor and the vulnerable are gutted by capitalist corporate America. He mentions what happens to children, preteen children. He also mentions the poor, whether white or African American, Hispanic, Native American. The merchants in this country make the poor pay more. Loan sharks, shoddy merchandise, substandard food products, inadequate medical care. It's all part and parcel of being poor. Third thing, people preoccupied by their bereavement are often preyed upon by the funeral industry. The Federal Trade Commission has an ample file on overcharges and deceptive practices from the unscrupulous merchants in that trade. People with rare diseases often require so-called orphan drugs. Under 1983 law, drug companies receive a seven-year monopoly with no price restraints on these drugs. Drug companies are also given huge tax credits for R&D costs associated with orphan drugs. He cites a couple of examples that are just shocking. The sorry condition of health insurance in this country, they're really, the Obama plan is going to provide some relief for some people, I guess. On the other hand, it's a mess. Single payer would have been so much easier. It just goes on and on and on. And you have to wonder sometimes, or I have to wonder sometimes, I should say, as I do most of the time lately, how much longer can these this abuse of the American people by capitalism and corporate America continue? The another good example is the Kevin Sack, New York Times today, talking about how the weak economy is crippling government programs that provide life-sustaining antiretroviral drugs to people with HIV or AIDS who can't afford them. Hundreds of people are being put on so-called waiting lists. Hundreds. Less than 3 years ago, that list, those lists had dwindled to zero. There was nobody, who needed these drugs, who couldn't get them. But as with these other safety net programs that we spent half a century developing until these Republican predators started to shred it with the advent of Ronald Reagan, demand, ballooning demand caused by persistent unemployment, loss of health insurance, is being met with reduction in government resources. The money required to keep such a program going would be a very small percentage of the money just appropriated by Congress to pay for more corporate capitalist fun and games in Afghanistan. Oh, and death and destruction, too. I don't know, man. You wonder how long does it have to get before Congress notices stuff. And New York Times Day editorial mentioned Kevin Sachs' report yesterday about the budget shortfalls that have led 11 states to close enrollment programs that provide drugs to people with HIV and AIDS. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities has been tracking essential services that have already been slashed. As of July 1st, yesterday, Arizona has ended many behavioral health services for 4,000 children. Oregon has made significant cuts to community health programs for nearly 1,500 mentally ill residents. And Oregon is eliminating a program that helps 2,000 residents with Alzheimer's or dementia receive care at home. They're eliminating it. It's gone. Kansas has reduced grants that help nearly 3,000 people with disabilities live independently. Idaho has ended or reduced cash assistance to 1,250 low-income residents who are elderly and or disabled. Public schools, colleges, universities are facing tuition increases or spending cuts in Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Minnesota, Missouri, Oregon, Virginia, Washington, Partridge, and Pear Tree. And it can be turned around. It could be turned around, I won't say easily, but certainly effectively. And that would be for President Obama, who is not really doing anything about this situation. He really isn't. He made sure that the banks were taken care of. Billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and hundreds of billions to the banks. But as far as Depression-style work projects for Americans to make a living wage and to pay taxes to provide the funding for these state programs and federal programs, oh, no, 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 no. I'm just tired of talking about it. I mean, what does it take? Where's the leadership? The Republican Party is a collection of screwballs. Conservatism in this country is a terrorist concept. So where are the Democrats and the progressives and the liberals? Hello? 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 Gotta do something. Meanwhile, the, your typical American, watches Fox News. Did you get this? Did you hear about this? Police in a Boston suburb are investigating threatening messages sent to members of the Arlington School Committee following lies put out by Fox News that the Arlington School Committee had banned the Pledge of Allegiance in Arlington schools. Jesus God. According to the Boston Globe, a police spokesperson described the messages as, quote, offensive and hateful and potentially criminal, end quote, and said that some of them were anti-Semitic. Now, the pledge hasn't been recited at Arlington High School in decades, although it is said voluntarily in the elementary and middle schools. When the school committee recently deadlocked on a student-led proposal to introduce a voluntary recitation in high school classes, Fox News Channel leaped on the controversy with a story headlined, "School officials in Massachusetts town won't let students recite the Pledge of Allegiance." Fox News. This chairman of the school committee, Joseph Curo, stated in a press release, quote, "It is unfortunate that the national media has chosen to distort this very serious debate in a manner which so badly misinforms the public." Mr. Curo, it wasn't the national media. It was the terrorists, the scumbastards at Fox News Channel. The school committee chairman went on to tell the Boston Globe that the messages of filth and hate were coming from, quote, all over the country. A few included indirect threats, and one said the members should go to North Korea, where their throats would be slit. Jesus. This is Fox News, you half-wits. And the controversy began when Arlington High School junior Sean Harrington presented the committee with a petition calling for the Pledge of Allegiance to be recited in every school. Harrington is an associate member. Harrington, Sean Harrington, is an associate member of Arlington's Republican Town Committee and the founder of a high school teenage Republican group. He refers to the pledge emotionally as, quote, "a living and breathing statement that basically strengthens a bond a person has with their country," end quote. At a school committee meeting last week, Harrington delivered what a story in the Arlington Patch, the high school paper, described as an impassioned speech reminding the members that freedom is not free.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. So anyway, Fox News Channel has a story headline: "School officials in Massachusetts town won't let students recite Pledge of Allegiance," which is a complete lie. And the controversy began when this high school junior, one Sean Harrington, presented the committee with a petition calling for the Pledge of Allegiance to be recited in every school. This young man is the founder of a high school teenage Republican group. Can you imagine somebody 17 insisting on pledges of allegiance? I mean, what kind of a 17-year-old, usually when you're 17, you're in full rebellion mode. Well, not this young lad. And he refers to the pledge as a living, breathing statement that, living and breathing? That basically strengthens the bond a person has with their country. He says he's been called a Nazi by his fellow students for his beliefs. So anyway, at a school committee meeting last week, young Master Harrington delivered what a story in the Arlington Patch, the school newspaper, described as an impassioned speech, reminding the members that freedom is not free. Boy, there's an original statement, right? Anyway, the school committee ultimately deadlocked on a proposal for a voluntary recitation of the pledge to be led each day over the intercom, with some members expressing concerns about infringing on the rights of students and teachers who did not wish to participate. But never mind, young Master Harrington doesn't care about that. Young Master Harrington wants everyone to be patriotic and to recite the pledge because it's a living, breathing statement. Woo-hoo! The school newspaper also says, quote, the exchange that followed the vote became quite heated, with Harrington's supporters vocalizing their disapproval and shouting expletives at the committee, end quote. Sure. Chairman Curl, the adult there, said that some of the other adults told us to go back to our own countries. Isn't that nice? Huh? After the account in the school newspaper appeared, Fox News quickly seized on it with a nationally broadcast radio interview of young Master Harrington, followed by a front page story that has garnered thousands of comments. When Sean Harrington entered his freshman year at Arlington High School, he noticed something particular. The Fox story began. There were no American flags in the classroom, and no one recited the Pledge of Allegiance. End quote. I was really heartbroken, young Master Harrington said of the deadlocked vote. It's hard to think that something so traditional in American society was turned down. It tells me that we basically cast aside what our country is founded on. End quote. Arlington's high school principal has since offered a compromise solution whereby he would personally lead a recitation of the pledge in the school lobby before classes each day for any student who wished to participate. But young Master Harrington has indicated he would not find this satisfactory, Seagile! Excuse me. The school committee will continue to wrestle with the issue over the summer. And perhaps find a way to make it all better in the fall, when school starts! Because young Master Harrington is right! We must make the pledge! Everyone shall stand and make the pledge! And if you don't, well, you're a commie, Kenyan, socialist, fascist, Christian-hating, un-American thug. I think what young Master Harrington needs to do is, as soon as he graduates, tell you what, young Master Harrington, join the United States Army. And stop harassing high school students and go harass third worlders. I think you'll find yourself a lot more happier. A lot more happy. A lot happier. Something of that nature. I find stories like that just frightening. Absolutely frightening. I really do. But it is a natural consequence, and it's a natural result of having filthy, filthy people, soul killers like Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, Savage, Crazy Eyes Malkin, Fox, doing their dirty work in this country. Marching down freedom's road. Hey.
Ain't nobody gonna stop me, nobody gonna keep me from marching down freedom's road. Ought to be plain as the nose on your face, there's room in this land for every race. Some folk think that freedom just ain't right. Those are the very people I want to fight. That's why I'm marching. Yes.
To share.
To America,
and we stand together to win the war against terrorism.
Yeah.
Our country is strong.
Yeah.
None of us will ever forget this day.
Show us your papers.
Yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just.
Yeah. It is 25 before the hour. Malachi writes regarding the pledge, funny how citizens of other countries manage to feel patriotic without pledges of allegiance. Well, they're all commies or Nazis or godless scum Kenyans or something. Andy in Saddle writes, I think liberalism pretty much died on April 12, 1945 in Warren Springs, Georgia. I only wish I could live in a country to see what it's like to have a liberal president. Oh, well. That would be the death of FDR. And Jamie writes, Mike, I was wondering if Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's pushing for state workers' pay to be knocked down to minimum wage across the board to save money and fight California's deficit, I wonder if he's given up his salary and all the benefits to him and to his family, which they receive courtesy of those same working people. In many reports of Schwarzenegger's plan of attack on hardworking people in his state, not one mentioned any personal sacrifice for the uber-wealthy Schwarzenegger. No surprise, just more disgust. We wouldn't want to tax those who have money and lots of it, now would we? Jamie. And, by the way, during the next break, we'll open the lines, and after that break, we will give away a podcast subscription free. That's a result of playing trivia. I didn't say that. I just assumed that our audience was so hip, Kathy, that they would get that. But, yeah, we'll play trivia and give away 1 year subscription free. Abe in Albuquerque writes, Dear Mike, I was just listening to you about the predatory behavior of these corporations that have sucked the life out of our country, and no one gives a damn thing about it. No one does a damn thing about it. However, down here in New Mexico, we've had a significant progressive history, especially in Albuquerque. But if you listen to the airwaves that run across our beautiful state, you'd think you were in Arizona. The most listened to AM station is, not surprisingly, a right-wing propaganda network for the small conservative minority here. In the afternoons, while coming home from work, I was listening to the Young Turks. And when they went to commercial, I decided to see what the boneheads on the right were bitching about today. And the local conservative talk show host, Jim Bilanucci, was taking in calls. And they were the usual, Obama's a socialist, Obama's a Kenyan, Obama's the Antichrist. You get the picture. But one caller made me furious. This sick blank went on bashing the unions and blaming them for the economic decay of this country, saying anyone who is part of a union should be hanged for treason. He said workers who take risks working in oil wells out in the sea or in the mines should not receive any type of benefits. Workers should work in the most dangerous environments, risking their lives or limbs, while their CEOs get to sit on their asses on their yachts and enjoy every penny they get. But that wasn't enough. What he said next really made my blood boil. The SOB went on defending the corporations. He claimed that corporations and predatory capitalism are what create jobs and make our economy great. The corporations should not be held down and chained by government regulations. They should be free to do whatever the hell they want in the name of the almighty dollar. The reason why I'm furious is I had no idea that the people who blindly follow scum like Beck and Limbaugh were so insensitive and unaware of the reality in front of them. I can't say I was surprised because that's how these people think. You always say how much you hate them. But I can't even begin to express my hatred for these blankers. These morons don't seem to understand that a corporation will slit their throats over a nickel and not have the blank-blank courtesy to take the knife out of their backs. These corporations that are, quote, creating jobs, end quote, are laying off Americans every day and sending their jobs to third world countries where labor laws don't exist. And workers, mainly young girls, as young as five, are forced to work 14 hours a day for 2 cents an hour, no breaks, no days off. Their life is chained down to the factory where guards beat them for not working fast enough. My brother lost his job at a phone company to someone in India, has never been able to find work for 2 years. And since he and the millions of other Americans losing their livelihoods will no longer get any more benefits, don't be surprised to see him and 20 other people standing on every intersection asking for spare change. This is what our country has come down to. If it were up to me, every corporation would be chopped down to only a small corner store and every single registered Republican would be rounded up and deported to Mars. I don't care who would go. They deserve no mercy for wanting to cut their own throats. Abe in Albuquerque. Yeah, that's something one thing I've never been able to understand. In a market where, a radio market, that would be a city, where, I'll call it what it's called, a market, when there is a choice. Very seldom is there a choice what people can listen to AM radio. But when there is a choice, invariably, the right-wingers will be drowned out by the voices of truth and justice. And yet, you get the impression that the country is hard right. And I guess that's because the ones with the national voice, not these local twits on right-wing radio, but the national twits on right-wing radio and television constantly beat home the idea that America is some incipient right-wing neo-Nazi country. Now, granted, the effort is being made by predatory capitalism to bring that about, corporatism. They wouldn't call it Nazism. That's that. But corporatism, they prefer Mussolini's phrase. But the towns or the markets or the cities where there is no choice in terms of radio entertainment. And then you get these reports from the right-wing talkers themselves. Oh, we're number one in the market. Well, you know, that I've talked about this before. The rating agency, Arbitron, that decides who's up and who's down, uses diaries. And people who fill in the diaries are the ones who get to register what they listen to. Most people who are not right-wingers look at the diaries and toss them in the trash. So that the majority of the dorky little diaries that come in have been filled at the end of the rating period have been filled in by right wingers who are determined to make it appear as though everyone in old Pickett City, Albuquerque, is a right winger. Not only that, but when you have markets where there is no alternative to this right wing garbage, then the universe of people listening to talk radio becomes smaller. More and more people say, what? I'm going to listen to these people all day? Now? No. And they switch over to the public broadcast station, listen to classical music, or they go to classical rock, or they go to contemporary, or they go to rap, or they go to a little bit, they go all different kinds of places. But when the universe for talk radio in a market sinks and becomes less, if you have 1 million people and 10% listen out of that million, to right-wing talk radio, that means you have 100,000 people listening to right-wing talk radio. If all of a sudden you only have 100,000 people in the entire city listening to right-wing talk radio because everyone else has found something better to do, then they can say, well, we have 100% listenership. It's very easy to manipulate the numbers. Very easy. So-called Christian radio does the same thing. They lie through their teeth, which I believe at some point in their holy texts, it is written that such a thing shouldn't happen, but the holy texts are for hoi polloi, not for the people, not for the people who can think. We have a break coming. When we come back, we are going to play podcast trivia. If you would like to win a one-year subscription to commercial-free Malloy Show podcast downloads, call now, 877-996-2556. And even if you're a right-wing monkey, we will give you a chance. And then you can say,
I infiltrated the Mike Malloy Show. I got one of those podcast things free.
877-996-2556. We'll be right back. Trivia here on the Malloy program, where you can win a one-year subscription to the Malloy Show podcast downloads free, commercial free, money free, just hours and hours and hours of entertainment brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Well, no, actually brought to you by your friends in the vast and erudite American Malloy, not just American either, Malloy listening audience, who collectively continue to send in gift subscription resources. And thanks to everybody who continues to do that. It never fails to amaze me. So, trivia. Let us go to Michelle, who is in Visalia. I guess I'm saying that right. California? Is that right?
You said it right.
Oh, great. All right, Michelle, are you ready for this?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, here we go. Music maestro, if you would, please. Do-do-do. There it is. All right. What politician, Michelle, recently came under fire for stating that, quote, the majority of immigrants entering this country illegally are trafficking drugs, end quote. Was it Republican Senate candidate from Kentucky, Rand Paul? Was it Arizona Senator John Kyle? Was it Republican Governor for California, Meg Whitman, or was it Arizona Governor Jan Brewer?
Oh, my goodness.
Do you want me to give it to
any one of those crazy
Well, it's true. Let me give it to you again. Which politician recently came under fire for saying that the majority of immigrants entering this country illegally are trafficking drugs? Was it Rand Paul from Kentucky, John Kyle, the senator from Arizona, Meg Whitman, the Republican candidate for California governor, or Arizona's governor, Jan Brewer?
Well, I'm going to narrow it down to one of the two Arizona politicians.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to say Jan Brewer.
You got it. All right.
Oh, my goodness. How exciting.
Yeah, I mean, she's the woman who has signed the law requiring people to carry papers if they look, you know, Mexican. I believe that's also the state where legislation is being introduced to deny children born in this country of the illegal undocumented workers, the right to American citizenship that the U.S. Constitution guarantees. I mean, it's just madness, but you're right. It is Jan Brewer. All right, Michelle, thanks.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much.
Let me put you on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. Jan Brewer. Oh, well. Tom is in Northwest Indiana, who is our Malloy board moderator. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Long time no talk, pal.
Yeah, buddy. I just called. I had to call on a Friday night just to, send my condolences to you and Kathy about Marge passing away.
And a lot of people.
My condolences to everybody who listens to your show, because right behind you, Marge was a favorite.
Yeah, she was. About 10 days ago when we found out from when RJ sent us the news that his mom had passed away, it just didn't compute. I mean, Marge not going to call in occasionally so I could say, Marge!
The times I visited Marge, I just recently met her, like, when she first went to the hospital.
Right.
But I've known her for years from your program.
And you went to visit
To meet her, when she was just like she is when you hear her on the phone. She's, she was just a...
Mm-hmm.
A down-to-earth person who just knew her stuff.
Right, right.
And last night RJ had a little memorial at a bowling alley in an area.
Yeah.
Close around here.
Yeah.
And he had some of the friends that I guess he knows around here. They were mostly there, and it was really kind of nice. You know, RJ's a lot like Marge. He's just a really nice person,
mm-hmm.
and he knows his stuff. But he really appreciated all the cards and letters that all of your listeners sent in to Marge the last time when she was in the hospital and getting care. And
mm-hmm.
He was really kind of nice. And, man, I'm going to miss that lady. I am just going to miss her a great deal.
I'll bet. You went to visit her when she was in that final illness, although it's my understanding that what put her in the hospital was not what ultimately took her life. But what was it like to sit there with her and talk to her face to face?
Oh, it was great. I mean, the first time I visited her was right when they were running the Kentucky Derby. So we were chatting and doing stuff, and she was going through some of the cards people had sent her. And then the race came on, we were all watching it and goofing around, and She had a great love for animals, and apparently, like everybody else in Indiana and across the world, when it comes to the Kentucky Derby, you just stop what you're doing and
mm-hmm.
you watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the visits I had there was really nice, and the getting the news about her death was really a shock, because I talked to her either the night before the night before that, and I was going to see her the next weekend, and she was sounding fine. I mean, the only time I ever heard her complain was she had this operation on her foot. And when
right.
she went to the transitional care facility, the physical therapist thought she should be working out standing up.
Right.
And I was halfway to visit her, and I gave her a call to see if she needed anything. She says, oh, man, I'm too tuckered out. These people don't know what they're doing. I have to talk to my doctor. That was the only time I heard her complain. Other than that, you would never know she was in the hospital. You never know she was hurting. She was always, she just had a strength about her.
Well, like you and a lot of people who were not her relatives, she's going to be missed an awful lot. Tom, thanks for the report, all right?
Okay, you guys take care. Have a nice weekend.
All right, you too, Tom. Take care.
Bye.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Sent me an email here regarding the first email I got about did Schwarzenegger accept any pay cuts? Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger does not accept a state salary and is in his last year as governor. The next governor's salary will be $173,000+. But Schwarzenegger apparently does not accept a state salary. All right. Well, thanks, Renee Louise, for clearing that up. I had no idea. All right. The number here is 877-996-2556. You want to chat? Give us a call. Merle is in Redford, Michigan, listening on XM. Hey, Merle.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fine, man. Happy belated birthday first.
Thank you.
I'm always 24 hours late because I'm a podcaster anyway, and I'm always a day late. I can listen to you at work the following day.
Well, that's, you know, being a podcast subscriber makes it all okay.
Oh, it does. It does. It does. Right. I wanted to make sure I wish you a happy belated birthday. The other thing is, Tom, I mean, Christine and Carl and Christine up at KPLJ, Tom Station out of Portland, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they sent a tribute out to you yesterday for your birthday. During that third hour.
Well, isn't that nice?
Yeah, I want to tell you that. And I also wanted to make sure people understand, Ed Schultz, who is not one of your favorite people I know, but you guys are still, for the most part, on the same side of the coin. He pointed out a long time ago, and it made me realize when I first got XM, that podcasting is what keeps our shows going.
Right.
And people have to realize that. It's important to do it. If you can't do it on an annual basis, do it on a monthly basis. Get to the annual.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the Heritage Foundation and those other big companies that buy our people's books and fund our people.
That's right.
And that's important for people to know that listen to you day in and day out, because I would be lost without Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes, Ed Schultz, Norman Goldman, and Tom Hartman.
All right.
I wanted to say that. You do good. My mother also has noticed that you've cut back on your bad words, and she's impressed. She always gets the first hour of you every night. I'm at work in the afternoons. I work from 3:30 till usually midnight.
Right.
And that's why I podcast. But she listens to you for the first hour. I have a radio in the back of her kitchen.
Right.
So she gets you every night, and she says, Mike is really clean his language up, and she's 78 years old, so I wanted to let you know that she notices that.
Well, if you would, tell Mom I'm doing it for her.
I will.
All right.
She's the one who lives in Enfield, North Carolina. You remember now.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Thanks,
right.
Buddy.
Thanks, Merle. I appreciate you checking in. You too, pal.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's rough. It is rough. So Merle's mom, if you're listening, I'm making an effort. I just get so angry, you know. That's all. Just get so angry. I don't know how to deal with that sometimes. So I do what any red-blooded American male will do. I start cussing. I got to tell you about this, too. You've heard of billionaire Pete Peterson. You haven't? Well, he spent a lot of money trying to convince people that Social Security is a serious threat to the country's finances. You know, this effort to get their filthy fingers on Social Security money has been a goal and objective of the right-wing crazy people in this country for decades now. And they tell the same lies and distortions. But anyway, this Pete Peterson, with his, you know, trying to get the message out that Social Security is a serious threat to the country's finances, that's a message that Fox News and a lot of corporate media love to echo. So when Peterson's group decided to hold town hall meetings to provide, to promote, I should say, fiscal austerity, this is all according to Peter Hart. By cutting Social Security and Medicare, one would have guessed that the media would have given it some attention. But funny thing happened this past weekend at these America Speaks events, is what they're called, America Speaks. Members of the public, after being given what is referred to by people who know misleading background information about the federal deficit, people got a chance to weigh in on what they thought the most prudent course of action might be. And as Thomas Frank, the guy that wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, as he wrote in the Wall Street Journal today, the results were likely a huge disappointment to billionaire Pete Peterson. Here's what Frank wrote. The event took place as scheduled last Saturday with thousands of citizens meeting in different cities. They duly absorbed a booklet alerting them to the danger of deficits. They deliberated, and then something funny happened on the way to the consensus. According to a preliminary compilation of results, participants supported, quote, an extra 5% tax, end quote, on incomes of greater than $1 million per year. 68% of them favored that. And an increase in the corporate income tax rate. 59% favor that. They also thought a so-called carbon tax was a good idea. 64% of them thought that. As well as a securities transaction tax. 61% thought that was a good idea. On Social Security, austerity was nowhere in sight as 85% backed raising the limit on taxable income. And only a miserable 27% thought that we should create personal savings accounts. Majorities favored cutting defense spending and expressed support for further recovery measures, even if they increased the deficit. End quote, Robert Frank in Wednesday's Wall Street Journal. So the bottom line here, raising taxes on the wealthy, a carbon tax levied on the polluters, cutting military spending. Who are these people? Well, they are common folk Americans like me, like you. But they happen to attend these so-called town halls, and they express their opinions. Sounds like a political agenda that most of the radio and television Nazis would tell you is politically impossible. But it also happens to be what a lot of people want. So, the truth of the matter is, I think, in so many of these instances, you know, television loves a fist fight. And Glenn Beck, being the cowardly little snake that he is, he loves to see him too, unless someone like I did challenges him, and then he runs and hides. But these right-wingers want to see trouble, trouble, boil and bubble, as much trouble as they can stir up. And they flood the airwaves with lies and distortions. Now here you have one of these right-wing billionaire scum who in a just society would probably be relieved legally and gently so as not to ruffle his feathers, all of his wealth and assets, and redistribute it among the people who truly need it, because obviously he doesn't. This freak holds town hall meetings to prove that people don't want anything to do with Social Security. They want it to be privatized, and the result is just the opposite. And they also asked for an increase in taxes on the wealthy, on the corporations. It's just like, why Willie Sutton robbed banks? Because that's where the money is. After what Bush and Cheney did over the past 8 years to give the wealthy 0.1%, the upper 0.1%, damn near everything, it's time for these swine to start paying back. I thought you might find that interesting. I damn sure did.
Mighty nation, under God above, we'll stand with pride and tell you this is the land we love. This is America, the USA. We're the land of the free, the home of the brave, where freedom rings loud and clear every day. This is America, the USA. This is America, the USA. We are the land of the free, the home of the brave, where freedom rings loud and clear every day.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. This is 4th of July weekend. After the break, we are going to have Prairie 2's report. His 4th of July report, so stick around for that. And again, program note, next week, we, Kathy and I and the kid, are going to take a week off. We're going to have a staycation. That term just sticks in my throat. We're not going anywhere. So if you feel inclined to send an email next week, go ahead and send it. If you want to write to Brad Friedman, though, during his program, you have to write directly to him, Brad at Bradblog, I think. He will let you know what that is. But we'll be around the homestead all next week, but we are taking a week off. So be nice to Brad, or he will come to the radio and beat your butt. All right? Bill is in Kansas City, listening on XM. Hey, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good, thanks. Hey, I just have a series of questions because I'm growing a little disheartened. I am an avowed socialist.
Uh-huh.
And I see what's happening in the rest of the world with all the other socialist models. And it kind of scares me that it's going to damper our efforts to move towards that model because they all seem to be going under. When I have a good friend from New Jersey, and they have a very progressive tax structure there, which I thought was good. But then they told me that $70 billion worth of wealth moved out of the state and decreased the tax rolled by or the tax revenues by about 40% over the last year. And I'm afraid that might happen on a national scale. We'll have the means of production, and we'll have a lot of production itself, a lot of wealth leave the country. And that's what seems to happen. So I was just wondering, how are we going to fund our programs and that kind of thing when all of the wealth, the production, the jobs, that kind of thing leaves the country, and how we can stop it?
Well, that pretty much to a greater or lesser degree, depending on your point of view, has already happened.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if besides tax, because there always seems to be a way for those you know, the wealthy people, for example, to get out of paying taxes. And I see it across the board, not just, you know, conservative wealthy people, but liberal wealthy people, the same thing. They find tax loopholes. And I'm wondering if wealth confiscation might be the next best thing instead of relying on a tax structure to get money out of them.
Well, I don't say, wealth confiscation, what is that? I mean, I know what it means in a communist sense. I don't think anybody would choose to be, if they were sane, would choose to get involved in what we have come to identify as communism. As far as socialism is concerned, socialism is not about confiscation of wealth whatsoever. It's about limiting the power and scope of predatory systems that debase human life, that destroy the ability to live one's life, and the chief perpetrator of that, of course, is capitalism, the kind of capitalism that exists in this country and a lot of other countries. As far as socialism not working, I don't think that that is a true statement at all. I think what happens is socialism starts being eaten alive by bureaucracy, which can very easily be prevented. And once that occurs, it starts to creak and rust and doesn't fulfill what it so easily can do. You know, to make the transition from the kind of predatory, death-dealing capitalism that we have now into a more humane system, economic system, it would require certain industries to be nationalized, certain changes to occur. And, you know, I've already laid out Malloy's plan for American socialism or democratic socialism or social democracy. Take your pick. You know, some people get very scared. You know, just nationalize banking and energy and healthcare and transportation and weapons production. Nationalize them. Take the government, take them over. And the goal, I've said before, the goal of nationalizing weapons production is to eliminate weapons production eventually altogether. And then you would leave intact small businesses and family farms and high-tech firms, all sorts of startup businesses. As long as labor and environmental laws are followed, all those kinds of companies would be left to flourish and do whatever they wanted to do to provide jobs. Most jobs in this country anyway, most new jobs are always provided by small businesses, right? Who needs these predatory bastards? We'll be right back.
Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
You gonna go watch fireworks Sunday? I love fireworks. I really do. And Molly loves them, and Kathy loves them. So we will probably go to the square in Decatur, Georgia, where there's a gazebo and orchestra plays, what, for about an hour prior to the fireworks, right? And they do everything from classical pieces to Beatles. It's great fun. It's real. It's kind of social democracy. Oops. you know, everybody gets together and it's fun. It's crowded, but it's a lot of fun. Bill is driving in California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I wanted to give you some kudos on the... I was listening to an earlier caller. He stated that you had reduced the amount of swearing you did in the first hour. And I wanted to know... Did you attend a 12-step program for that? Because I'm having a lot of trouble reducing my swearing.
No, I have a one-step program. I have a lot of program directors who carry the program on various radio stations. Tell me if I don't stop, they're going to drop the show.
So because what I think of people like Sharon Ingalls and John Boehner.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really, really pissed off the other day. I've been up north working, and I just didn't get a chance to call anyone in bed. But, I mean, these people, I have a better idea than voting them out of office, but it's against the law.
Right, right.
So, you can swear when you're talking about these people, please feel free to double swear for me. Because,
Well, I'll tell you how I get around it, Bill. And this is kind of cool. I have to put you on hold because you're kind of fading out. We video stream the program now on Ustream.com, and to watch the video, just get on your computer and go to MikeMalloy.com, click on Malloy Vision, and bada bing, bada boom, there it is. So while I don't use those terrible curse words on the air anymore, I wrote up a handful of little 3x5 cards. And what I wrote on the 3x5 cards is what you would expect would be written on 3x5 cards to somebody who just can't seem to get away from curse words. The way junkies can't get away from methadone or something, or the way Limbaugh can't get away from OxyContin. So when I'm saying, oh, well, I'll tell you what, you know what I think of John Boehner, I'm holding up a little card that is very clear and explicit and very scatological and very definitely would get me off the air and plus probably a few FCC fines. So it's just between the Ustream viewers and me. So try that sometime, Bill. Because how do you describe someone like this angle crazy woman or a Beck or, without getting right down into the same intellectual gutter that they wallow in? I mean, everything that they say is a lie or it's perverse or it's designed to incite, trouble or rioting in the streets, murder and mayhem. You know, I can't stand the fact that so-called liberals or progressives, that would be me, are restricted in the things we say. We're not restricted by any rules or regulations. I mean, I could get on the air and say the same kind of crap that Beck or Sharon Angle says, but I've got a self-imposed restriction. It's called wanting to tell the truth rather than wanting to tell these horrendous right-wing lies. But I get, like a lot of people, I just get so damn angry. I really do. I mean, just want to grab somebody by the lapels. You know, like in these old Hollywood movies from the 40s, the old film noir, and just grab somebody and jerk them up so their face is about 2 inches from mine, and then slap them back and forth. Bap, 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 bap. Push him up against the wall and say, now do you want some more of that? And then grab him again by the lapels and bap, 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 bap. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Bill? All right, take care, pal. Got a boogie. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Just wanted to kind of point out that it's the 234th anniversary of our separation from Great Britain today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, 30-odd years ago or whatever, I picked up a book written by, of all things, a liberal judge on the Supreme Court named William O. Douglas.
Yeah, I remember him.
And he wrote a thing called Almanac of Liberty, where he went through day by day what had happened on various days of the year, and on July 2nd, independence.
It was July 2nd, huh?
Yeah. Well, my thing at the time, I've gone back and I've looked up something on it, but my thing at the time was they declared independence on July 2nd, giving everybody 2 days to get out of town before they declared it to the rest of the people, and the king's people would be coming to get them. But apparently it was voted on by the Second Continental Congress. Most of the people that signed the Declaration of Independence signed it on the 2nd. And of all things, according to Wikipedia, if that's a source that one can believe.
Yeah, it is.
John Adams, somebody that wouldn't know anything about American history, only being the second American president, first American vice president, and defender of the soldiers that did the Boston Massacre, wrote to his wife Abigail, who thought that maybe women should get a better deal than they did out of the Constitution, that the second day of July 1776 will be the most memorable epoch in history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as a great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. Well, so much for him. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, illuminations from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward, evermore. And it's like, you know, nobody knows this, that, you know, July 4th was actually July 2nd.
Well, you know, I didn't know that. I had no idea. I have just, the rest of the sheep in this country, I just kind of go along with July 4th, all right, hey!
Yeah, it's what we're taught in history class, so it had to be true.
Well, it is. Well, that's great information. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, something like George W. Bush won the 2000 election.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Take care of that.
All right, sir. Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Matt is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Someone mentioned earlier tonight, and I've been meaning to call in about this, the last liberal president. I came of age in the, I remember when Kennedy was killed. I'm in my 50s, and, you know, I guess it, maybe Carter was the last one. What do you think? I mean,
Well, I don't think Jimmy Carter was a liberal. He was a a moderate. He was a white male Southern evangelical military guy.
Yeah.
And but I think he had because of his adherence to his religion, he had a belief in justice. And I think what Carter was about was justice. There was a time in this country when conservatives were about justice too, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But I think Carter was about justice and fair play. And if there's one thing that conservatives do not want, it is justice. Because if there's justice, then so many so-called conservatives will find themselves or could find themselves in a different time, a different place, at the end of a rope or waiting for the blade to come swishing down.
France.
Yeah, right. So the last thing conservatives want is justice. They want dominance. They want trouble. They want disagreement between people, between groups. They want chaos and confusion. The last thing conservatives want is justice. I frankly think, and you probably mentioned this to Kathy, that the last president of the United States who really committed liberalism on the country was Richard Nixon.
she mentioned that, and it took me aback, and I had to think about it, yeah.
Yeah, if you take a look at the different agencies that were put together, environmental agencies, almost passed health care, Nixon was just insane. The problem with Nixon was he was crazy. He was a megalomaniac, and it's a shame. I think Nixon could have been... could have found a better place in history had he just not been so crazy. I got to leave there, Matt. Thanks. We'll be right back.
I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. While all around me a voice was sounding.
Sounds fairly authentic. That's the Marine Band. 10 before the hour. Email from Jim regarding that little item we had earlier this evening about young Master Harrington, who is a high school senior, and he wants a forced Pledge of Allegiance in his school. He is a young Republican. And the fact that he has thrown the entire gutless school committee, I believe they call it, into disarray. Jim writes, I have bad news for young Harrington. My service was from September 1951 to August 1953. And aside from basic infantry light weapons training, it was entirely in the 43rd Infantry Division, which in those days was the New England National Guard called up for wartime service. Neither in training nor serving in the 43rd were we ever asked to recite the pledge or sing the national anthem. We never thought that odd. We certainly wouldn't have thought we were less than patriotic. Yeah, well, Jim, you know, you're coming at it from a real-world perspective, from personal experience, from a knowledge, a close association with reality. Our young Master Harrington is being egged on, obviously, by all the adults in his immediate life, or his church people, or the Young Republicans Association, who tell him that someday he can be governor of whatever the hell state it was. And there's a vast difference between a snotty teenager who tries to show his neo-Nazi bona fides, and someone who actually, as you did, Jim, actually got into the, not just the spirit of it all, but the reality of it all. I don't think young Master Harrington would have any sense of what you were talking about. He would probably look at you as just some old bastard who went to war someplace. Doesn't mean anything to these guys. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona, still. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Hey, happy birthday, old man. I understand your birthday was yesterday.
It was indeed. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday, Tom.
Yeah, I was going to be a Yankee Doodle Dandy, but I missed it by about a couple hours.
Well,
my mom squeezed it off, and you know, I was just a Yankee, though.
Yeah?
So you know what a Yankee is, don't you?
No, what is it?
It's just like a quickie, only you can do it by yourself.
Oh, God.
Ha, ha, ha. Anyway, I miss Marge.
Yeah, I do, too. I don't like the fact that a lot of people I know... die. I don't know how else to put it. I went through the 80s. I had a lot of friends here in Atlanta who died of AIDS back when AIDS was this killer disease. They didn't know how to control it. I've lost friends in military service. I've lost friends because of the diseases that you get as you start to get old, and some that you start to get because you misuse your body. But I hate it. I hate it. I hate to...
It happens more. By the way, speaking of dying, I got on those e-cigarettes.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How's that working out for you?
Well, it's not as good as the real thing, but it's better than
the real thing.
Patches.
Well, I'll tell you what, everybody I've talked to who have tried those e-cigarettes, thanks to what Bob Alexander put out there for people to learn about, everyone has praised it and said they are so glad that they are no longer sucking smoke into their lungs. So, hey, listen, Tom, have a happy 4th. Take care. And Chuck is in Knoxville listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. Happy birthday, bud.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You were playing This Land Is Your Land, and it reminded me of something I'd heard about that song. The latter verses were written during the Depression. I guess the whole song was probably by Woody Guthrie.
Woody Guthrie, right.
But he went into quite a diatribe in the latter verses about what was going on in the country. I thought it was rather interesting. I just wondered if I'd ask Kathy if y'all had heard of the latter verses, and she said you had, but it's been a very long time.
It has indeed, and I could not. Anyone can quote that, the first verse. We all over a certain age, we remember right. That music. No, the latter verses, I couldn't give you one line from.
I couldn't either. I couldn't either.
I know,
but it was fascinating.
Yeah. Indeed.
It put you right in the time.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to. Mentioned something about the upcoming situation in terms of a revolution or whatever, but there seems to be a certain solace among certain people on the left that, there's going to come a day where the Republicans are going to take over, just let it all collapse, and then it will start with a bright, brand new day. Mm-hmm. And I just want people to think about the fact that given that the media is controlled by the right, and they're very capable of blaming the left for everything that happens, when the right takes over, nothing's going to change, They're still going to blame the left for everything that goes wrong, and there's no reason to believe that people on the right, the average working man, is going to change his opinion. We need to all be on the same page.
Well, that's true, but
to be successful,
Well, yeah, but I think in so many instances, Chuck, it takes... an event of almost cataclysmic proportions to make people come to the awareness of what you just said, and I don't wish trouble on this country, but we've got to turn around, or we're going to end. Chuck, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Be kind to Brad Friedman. He'll be filling in for me all next week. Take care. I'll see you Monday week. I'm Mike Malloy. Keep it lit. Have a great weekend. Have a couple of great weekends. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.